This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's episode 217, and this is the show you probably have been waiting for, not necessarily that you're waiting for us to shed, but the topic. The Cardinals have a head coach. They make the biggest splash of all the coaching names that you could have done, and they hire Cliff Kingsbury, former Texas Tech, former Texas Tech head coach, a cup of tea as the USC's offensive coordinator. Technically, he never actually did anything as offensive coordinator. But the Cardinals have their coach. They were the first to announce that. They weren't technically the first to hire to have their coach picked out, as the Green Bay Packers the day before on Monday, it had been reported that Matt LaFleur was heading there. But the Cardinals were the very first team of the eight to announce their hiring, a change from the last two coaching searches when they were the very last. They took their time. They were deliberate. This time, they moved quickly. And they got their guy, a guy that, you know, it's probably going to be a really high risk, high reward type pick. But if it fails, I think it's going to fail spectacularly with a lot of fun. And so that's what we're going to talk about in this show. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. And Revenge of the Birds is SB Nation's NFL site. Seth, we get to talk about a coach. I wasn't sure if we're up in, as of yesterday or even this morning, I didn't know we were going to quite have a show. So it's Tuesday night. And then the announcement hits in the afternoon. And I guess we got to have a show now since we know a little bit more. It's exciting, isn't it?
It is. It's we're back. It's not kind of a boring hire. It's not Jim Caldwell. It's not Dan Campbell. It's not guys that would probably be okay NFL coaches. It's an exciting, aggressive, swing for the fences type hire, and not something, quite frankly, when you and I talked last week, we expected. We'll talk about it more tonight, but you know, I told you I had heard their top two were, you know, Mike McCarthy and Adam Gase, and they interviewed Gase first, right, on Wednesday. And from there, it just seemed like from Thursday on, it was the Cliff Kingsbury wait and see show. Like, it just seemed like that was what the Cardinals were going to do.
Right. And in this show, what we're going to talk about, we're going to react to the hire, the reasons why people will like it. We're going to talk about where there's going to be some concerns, because obviously he has no NFL experience other than his cup of tea as a backup quarterback. We're gonna look at some of the stats that he had in his college gigs, and Seth will talk more about some of the scheme that will probably get you excited. And then lastly, we're also going to say kind of secondary news is the Cardinals saw Bruce Arians, who retired last year, decide to come back to the league, and he joins the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and appears to be getting the gang back together over there, as a good chunk of the former coaching staff he had with the Cardinals will join him in Tampa, and the Cardinals will face Tampa on the road this year. So that will make for an intriguing game, depending on how things play out. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight today on this episode of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, kind of a timeline as to what happened. So we began, so as Seth said, we started hearing chatter last week, late in the week on Thursday, about the Cardinals being interested in Kingsbury. Then came the report that USC was blocking interview requests as the NFL kind of renewed a rule that had been on the books for a long time that basically forces teams to go through the same process with college coaching staffs or college coaches as they do in the NFL, that they have to formally request permission and respect the wishes of that team. And if they don't, then they run the risk of being penalized and lost draft pick, that sort of thing. And so the story by the weekend was how USC was stopping him, was blocking him as he signed, you know, to be their offensive coordinator at the beginning of December. Then there was a report out there about how he has a low buyout and how he could. I never saw a report that said he was considering paying out the buyout and resigning just to interview for the job. But that was a possibility. Then at the beginning, you know, yesterday, we get reports that, hey, he's now available. However it happened, he's still technically employed by USC, but he's going to interview. He got on a plane to go interview with the Jets on Monday. Then there was he was scheduled to interview with the Cardinals on Tuesday. Then the report was that the Jets were trying to keep them there as long as they can. You know, they wanted to get him to sign a deal before he left, that he was going to have the interview on Tuesday night with the Cardinals. And then about between 1 and 2 p.m., it seems, about 1 o'clock, the report came out that the deal was, well, that they were finalizing a deal. Actually, the finalization of the deal report came in the morning. And by 1 in the afternoon, 2 in the afternoon, he was in Phoenix signing his contract. The Cardinals announced it officially. So those reports out there were sort of all over the place, but they were there. All of that ended up with the Cardinals hiring Cliff Kingsbury, and you get to see a lot of wordplay with the Cardinals changing their Cardinals name from on Twitter from a C to a K, all sorts of fun like that. But we're gonna start off by reacting to this. Now, Seth, what was your initial reaction to the thing? Because Seth on social media, on Revenge of the Birds, and on this show as well, he's been stumping for Kingsbury for a number of reasons.
Yeah, I was excited. I mean, I said last week, hey, let's just go for it. Just go down swinging. If you're going to go down, just go down swinging at this point. And Kingsbury was the guide to me, because you and I talked about this. Keim wasn't going to get fired after this year. I mean, after the 2019 season, Keim was not going to get fired unless we're talking 0-16, 1-15, just kind of, you know, a complete failure of a season. So if you're gonna go down swinging, and that's not to say that this is gonna fail, but you know, you were literally last in, I think, 10 of the 12 major offensive categories, and you were no higher than 28th in any of them. And I think that was touchdown runs. I think you were 28th in touchdown runs. And so if you're going to be that bad of an NFL team, you need to wildly swing in the other direction. You don't need to play it safe. You don't need to, you know, just try to find a guy that can right the ship. You need to try to find a guy that can change the culture like Bruce Arians did, that can change the program like Ken Wisenhunt did. And I think, you know, I'll praise Keim for that. I think he did that in hiring Kingsbury, because this is an exciting, completely different hire than anything that the Cardinals have ever done. I went through their long, long list of head coaches since they moved to Arizona, and outside of two, they've all been just massive failures. I mean, that's not even, that's like putting it mildly.
Right. And they've almost in every single case followed the same blueprint, with the exception of Buddy Ryan. They were all basically coordinators previously. Yep. And so you start off with Joe Bugle. He was the hot offensive. He was the hot coordinator coming off of those years from the Hogs offensive line of the Redskins. They hire him. Not so good. So from Bugle, they go to Buddy Ryan. He's been a head coach, but he had been a head coach before, but when they hired him, he was not a head coach. He had been fired, and it was a defensive coordinator. From Buddy Ryan, they Vince go to Tobin. And, you know, he had had success as a coordinator as well. When Vince Tobin goes, they promote. And so they go with the coordinator that they had in Dave McGinnis, that was just absolutely loved by everyone, just didn't do anything on the field. Then they bring Dennis Green, previous head coach. So you've got Buddy Ryan and Dennis Green. That's it. The next hire, Ken Wisenhunt, coordinator up in, you know, in waiting. Bruce Arians, a coordinator. He had some interim stuff, but he, you know, he'd done his thing. And then you go with Wilkes again, defensive coordinator, was kind of a high riser, you know, rising up through the ranks. But now, completely different. This is something they've never done. They've never hired anyone off the college ranks, ever. They've never hired anyone who's never been on an NFL coaching staff. And they certainly have never hired anyone who had just been fired from the previous job.
Yeah, and that was the thing is, when we talked about this last week, we talked about two guys in Mike McCarthy and Eric Bieniemy who just flat out said no. Another name that was bandied about throughout the kind of the old standard media here was Mike Munchak. Well, he said no last year. So your options were, like we said, Adam Gase.
Fired from his job.
Yeah, just fired from his job. Allegedly a very difficult person to deal with.
Think Todd Haley. He's kind of a Todd Haley.
Todd Haley, Josh McDaniels type of personality. Then you had Dan Campbell, who is not even a coordinator. He's an assistant head coach and tight ends coach. He had an interim stint with the Miami Dolphins. And then they had Zach Taylor, who is 35, right? But he's never even been a coordinator. He's a quarterback coach.
He was an interim coordinator for 5 games.
With that same Dolphins team, yes. Right? and then you had Jim Caldwell. And so outside of Caldwell, literally it was a bunch of guys that hadn't been successful as head coaches or haven't even really been coordinators in the NFL. Those were the Cardinals' choices. And your complaint and my complaint with the idea of Caldwell was the same. The guy's 64. Like, if you're trying to build something, if you're trying to create something, if you're not just trying to get back to 500, but you're in fact trying to, you know, create a culture of winning here in Arizona, you have to find somebody that can create that culture. And Caldwell could create the culture, but I mean, what are you going to get 5 years out of him? Maybe 6 years. I mean, think about it in this terms. If Caldwell was successful, and we'll just say if, and he gets the whole contract, so all 5 years, and he's 70 at that end of that season, Josh Rosen would only be 27. So it's not like you're even close to the Josh. You're just entering the Josh Rosen prime and your head coach is 70. And oh, by the way, if you're successful, it's likely that you're on probably offensive coordinator, what, 2 or 3 in year 5. So it was just one of those things, like, if you're going to do this, and you're going to try to find a way to buoy your franchise quarterback or the guy you drafted to be your franchise quarterback, the most important thing to do is give him stability. And that stability comes in a guy that is not only the head coach, but is going to be the OC, is going to be the quarterback coach, is going to be the play caller, is going to be the guy that's developing the offensive game plans. So as long as Kingsbury's here, and as long as Rosen's here, they're married together. They'll likely either succeed or fail together as well. So it made too much sense from all of that perspective. On top of, you're talking about a guy that is one of the most sought after offensive minds in all of football, not just college or pro. This is a guy that literally had jobs waiting for him when he was fired from Texas Tech. I mean, Sean McVay said, come be an offensive assistant, you know, a special offensive assistant for our playoff run. USC gave him the OC job with a, hey, you know, if Clay Helton doesn't work out, guess who's next, right? Type of nudge, nudge, wink, wink type thing. The Patriots were saying, hey, Josh Daniels leaves. We want you to be our OC. You know, so it's not like this guy is – it's not like they just went and got some college guy running the A1 offense. This is a guy that is wildly respected throughout the NFL and throughout college football for his offensive acumen. And people really believe that he can be the difference maker for the Cardinals. And the Cardinals, quite frankly, they need that.
Right. Right. And this, what you got to like about this now, it is following it. This is the copycat league. But there's some people who think that you're kind of reaching. You're kind of reaching for this guy. Everyone's trying to find the next Sean McVay. But let's be honest. When the Rams hired Sean McVay, no one knew that Sean McVay was going to be Sean McVay. It was even the hiring of Sean McVay felt like a reach because he was on the he was a Kyle Shanahan guy, a guy who, you know, that was the exciting pick for the 49ers to pick up, under the Gruden Shanahan type thing, who had had success offensively. And so McVay, it would have kind of like the Cardinals taking Zach Taylor, for example, from the Rams. But if you're going to do something, what's exciting about this is that we know absolutely that there's no possible way for this offense to do worse than they did last year. Why not bring in a guy? And we'll talk about some of the numbers. This guy's offense, no matter where he is, puts up incredible passing numbers, incredible scoring numbers. They do extremely well in the red zone. He's widely regarded as a great play caller. And so while there you might have the lack of experience, you get this youth, you get this guy who's been an NFL quarterback, so it's not like he's never been in the NFL. So he's been a backup quarterback. He was a teammate to Tom Brady. He knows how NFL game plans work. He knows how NFL offenses work. But at the same time, he gets the new concepts, the contemporary offensive schemes that are hitting the NFL. He's worked with some great look at the quarterbacks that he's worked with in college. Case Keenum. Now, say what you want in his NFL career, but he put up amazing numbers at Houston. He worked with Davis Webb briefly, worked with Baker Mayfield briefly. He worked with Johnny Manziel. He worked with Patrick Mahomes. That is quite the pedigree. So that's something you have to be very excited about. And that's what you love to see. You want to see this. It was definitely out of the box, maybe as a reach, but they're trying to do something different than they've done in the past, which after Arians, the Wilkes hire was trying to kind of play it safe. Now we're going with something very different. It's the Cardinals are creating a new paradigm of coaching hire.
Well, and the other thing is this, and it was something that you and I have talked about, like this is the perfect kind of setup for the Cardinals, because if this is successful, it's a 39-year-old head coach. It's a 21, about to be 22-year-old quarterback. Like that's a marriage that can last decades. I mean, I was joking about it with you off the air, but like if the Cardinals hired Jim Caldwell, he's 65. So it would be 2044 before he's the same age.
He could coach 25 years.
Yes,
and still be.
Yeah, it's 25 years before he's the age of Jim Caldwell. And obviously, you know, I mean, even Brady and Belichick, that would be insane. But that's the whole idea, is like, okay, now we have a guy that can coach our quarterback for, if he's, you know, as great as we think he is, for 16 seasons, and he'll have, you know, he'll be there for all of them.
Well, and here's the thing. He's now going to be on Rosen, burned through two offensive – well, he didn't do it, but he's already on his third offensive coordinator. Cliff Kingsbury becomes the de facto offensive coordinator like Bruce Arians. Things go well. That's it. Forever.
Right. And that's – the other thing is this, and you hate to say this because it's literally day one of the relationship, but if things – don't go well, you clean house and you start over in 2021 and you just draft Trevor Lawrence with the first overall pick. And guess what? Your new GM and your new head coach are happy, because that's the thing, is everybody will get blown out together. It'll just all go away together. So this is the ultimate tie, you know, everybody is tied together. There is no, well, Steve Keim will get another one, or this, you know, like if this goes south and doesn't work, then you're probably looking at a new head coach, a new GM, and a new quarterback. And if this works, then you've got years and years and years to just build.
Right. And so there's lots to like about this. You have to like what it means for Josh Rosen. You have to like what it means for the offensive scheme in terms of excitement. And something I told you about before we went on the air, what I feel is probably the most intriguing thing is that even if this team is not good, let's kind of look back a couple of years ago before, you know, when Andrew Luck was still Andrew Luck and hadn't gotten hurt and then came back to be Andrew Luck this year. You look at those Colts teams. You look at those Colts teams that were not great, but that you knew that they were going to put up points, or even the Atlanta Falcons for a couple of years. You know they're going to put up points. You didn't know if the defense was going to hold up. But guess what? Even if the defense doesn't come around right away, that means this is an exciting bad team. What we went through in 2018 was not only a bad football team, it was an unwatchable football team. So there was no excitement to it. This brings excitement even in losses, what it should do, which is what we want to see first and foremost, because even if success doesn't come early, because it doesn't always happen, it will bring fan intrigue back. It'll fire up the fans. It'll get them excited for that.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I joke about it, but if you're going to fail, at least fail being somebody that's interesting. The Cardinals weren't even interesting last year.
Nope, no, they weren't. And we're still surprised people are listening to the show. So thank you. Because there wasn't much. What we talked about was not all that interesting. It was, we were definitely for the diehards and for the people who are hate themselves for being football fans.
Well, and anyway. Honestly, that's what it was, though. I mean, people, there was nothing intriguing about this team. There wasn't anything interesting about this team. And quite frankly, people, I mean, it probably came out a lot of like, oh, this is being negative. It's like, well, how do you spin a season that is 3-13 and literally one of the worst, if not the worst in team history?
Yeah. And so with that, let's wrap up. That's the part of the Rise Up Syria podcast. Let's talk about next. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk about, well, it's not all exciting. There are definite concerns about this. Like we said, this could fail. That's coming up next on Rise Up Syria. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about the kind of concerns, because let's be honest, because of the unlikeliness or the kind of the lack of precedent for this sort of hire, the out-of-the-box thought, that does come with concerns. It is not a universally liked move. Why should fans be concerned?
I think fans have to be concerned because it's rare to see these type of out-of-the-box hires work. Chip Kelly had more success than Cliff Kingsbury as a college coach, and so that's he, after his first year, kind of went back in terms of ability. Steve Spurrier obviously was a highly successful head coach in college. Nick Saban quit on the Miami Dolphins. So it's not something that actually works all the time, or rarely. And Spurrier was only a coach for 2 years. And again, he was a coach. He was 7-9 his first year, and that was 2002. They were 25th in points. They were 20th in yards. They were 21st in passing. They ran the ball okay. They were 13th in rushing. But, Spurrier was the fun and gun, right? Like, they were the amazing offense, and they just struggled. Now, to be fair, his quarterbacks were some guy named Shane Matthews, Patrick Ramsey, and Danny Werfel. But
Danny Werfel was great.
In college, yeah, he was fantastic in college. And so that's the thing, is like, these guys, when they're hired, they don't always work out. And that's okay, because here's the other thing. And people are going to laugh at me when I say this. So the thing with Kingsbury is he actually struggled with the most important thing in the college aspect, and that was recruiting. He struggled to recruit players to Texas Tech. Now, those of you who follow college football, Texas Tech isn't exactly a place that you can sell 18 to 20-year-olds to go to. It's not Tempe. It's not even really Tucson. It's more like Yuma.
Well, and it's not, in terms of Texas, it's you've got Texas. You've got Texas A&M. You've got, to some lesser extent, you've got some of the other schools
you've even got TCU at this
TCU point. TCU as well, Baylor. All of those, there's some schools. There's schools all over Texas that people will go to and have had success, because that's where big playmakers go.
Right. And so that's the thing, is when you look at Kingsbury's, his side of the ball, his schematics and his way of doing things, was there ever an issue offensively at Texas Tech? No. I mean, right now, he currently has four quarterbacks in the NFL: Case Keenum, Davis Webb, Baker Mayfield, and Patrick Mahomes.
And Johnny Manziel. Oh, nope. Wait, he's gone to the NFL now.
Yeah. But, so he's got four guys that are in the NFL. It's when you look at the negative aspects, I completely understand it. He's unproven. How is he going to, who is he going to lean on to be his defensive guy? The one thing about McVay that has worked so incredibly well is the fact that he had Wade Phillips there to kind of be the defense, not to run the defense, to be the defense. So it's made it really easy for him just to focus on the offensive side of the ball. Cliff Kingsbury is going to have to do the same thing. They're going to have to find a guy that is the defense for the Arizona Cardinals. And the other thing is this. How's a 39-year-old that people like to call the bro coach, that people, make fun of because he is a very handsome man. He's a guy that, you know, people are drawn to because of his looks and personality and persona. How will NFL players deal with that? But here's the thing, and you and I haven't really had to talk about this much because it's not something that comes up a whole lot. But the easiest way to sell yourself to a professional is to win. If you win football games, you endear yourself to the team. You endear yourself to your players. Your players buy in. It's a lot easier to buy in when you're winning and people are going, oh, okay, I trust you. And so on that note, there are negatives. There are going to be pitfalls, and there are, and it realistically could be a complete and utter dumpster fire.
Right. Right.
So, but in the same sentence, it's going to be an era of Cardinals football we will literally never forget.
Correct. You know, one of the biggest challenges we're going to have to see is what does he do for his coaching staff? As it turns out, one of the major issues that Steve Wilks had was the quality of his staff. A lot of them were first timers in their positions, sort of unproven. Not everyone, but many of them. What connections does he have? So he's either going to be bringing guys he has relationships around the college ranks to promote to the pros. We have no idea how that will turn out. What sort of connections does he already have in the NFL in terms of coaching coaches and assistants around the league? And if he doesn't, what sort of appeal will he have personally for coaches to want to work under him who hasn't had any track record? So that's another big concern. Unless, for example, and we think it was kind of whispered about, we've suggested it, that when they hired Steve Wilks, that the front office already had Mike McCoy kind of in mind for it.
Yeah.
Yes. And so that was sort of the plan. Hey, Steve, we like you. How about this guy who's been a coach before, who's been a head coach, knows to pair him up with. So if they've got a DC in their pocket already, maybe that's the case. Otherwise, it's going to be very interesting to see how he goes about, especially because the complete contrast from Bruce Arians, who came already knowing everyone on his staff. He somehow had that lined up both times. So he knew who his people were going to be. He'd had his feelers around, like he gets hired, and we're going to talk about the Bruce Arians got hired by the Tampa Bay Bucks, and his guys, he's got guys everywhere that will follow him anywhere. And we don't have that with Kingsbury yet. He will develop. And guess what? He literally has no NFL coaching tree. He's a new tree. He's a new different forest. There's no NFL coaching tree he comes from.
No, and this is a seedling. I mean, this isn't even a tree. Like, this is literally a seedling, and they're going to see if it grows. It's the desert, so we know how that works out, right? But the reality is also this. And this, you want to talk about his downfall. If you want to talk about what made him fail at Texas Tech, and I know this, I talked to people about this because I wanted to understand it. Allegedly, and not even allegedly, this is documented stuff, so I'll just say it. He apparently was very much the figure out the defense, I'm running the offense type of guy. And so he, in a way, created issues himself by not taking control of the team as the head coach, and instead allowing others to control half of the team. Now we just said if this is going to work 100%, that's what they need to do. But you need to have a voice still. You need to have somebody you can talk to, that you can conversate with, that you can figure things out with, and Kingsbury never did that at Texas Tech. And so, like Jess is saying, there's zero connections here. The only name I've heard brought up that is likely to be an Arizona Cardinals coach next year is Wes Welker. And he is currently the Texans wide receiver coach.
I think he's an assistant special teams / something coach.
Yeah, like assistant special teams and receivers, backs.
He's bottom of the totem pole coach because he's just cutting his teeth, obviously.
Right, and so he could be a guy that comes in and does what? Coaches wide receivers. You know, he's a guy that's familiar with, obviously, with Kingsbury and his offense because he played at Texas Tech. So it's a guy that can come in. He's familiar with verbiage, how things should be taught, the way things should be run. That's the only name I've even heard whispered in this sentence. So being, what's the word I'm looking for? Stressed out is not the right word, but being leery of the coaches that Kingsbury surrounds himself with is a very fair criticism.
And that's what we're going to find out in the days to come. Obviously Wednesday, when this episode drops, depends on when I can get the drop. So you might be listening to this after the introductory press conference. I'm sure that there will be questions asked about the type of staff that he has, if he has people in mind, connections, whatnot. But yeah, it's, you have to wonder, you obviously think, so he ran a middling program at Texas Tech and didn't dominate. He had success. He beat teams that he shouldn't have beaten. He had great offensive performances against great teams. But ultimately, this is a guy who failed at his last job in college and the NFL ranks we don't know about. I mean, we've seen too many. He has no NFL experience at all. We've seen too many other first timers in the NFL from college crash and burn, or in the case of Chip Kelly, catch the league by storm and then gradually fall apart.
Well, in terms of Kelly's biggest downfall was it was similar to Ken Wisenhunt when he decided, hey, I want to be the guy that makes the decisions on this roster, that makes the decisions on X, Y, and Z. Then all of a sudden his team started to suck. And it's like, hey, if you separate yourself, it's rare, right? Like you have who? Bill Belichick. I mean, outside of that, right now in the game,
Gruden.
Yeah, exactly.
Around.
Exactly my point. But you know, and so I think this is. I mean, because we're going to talk about other aspects of the hiring in a second, but I think this is it right here, and this is the biggest thing to understand. This is why I think the criticism is so misplaced and unfounded, and it's not like the Cardinals went out and didn't interview anybody, didn't look at anybody, and just said, hey, we're hiring Cliff Kingsbury. They were turned down by, at least I can tell you this for sure, they were turned down by the guy that they wanted in Mike McCarthy. I mean, Mike McCarthy didn't even want to take an interview here. He didn't even like come here and say like, hey, you know, sell me, right? He just said, no, I'm good. Like, I'm going to sit this one out, or I'm going to take interviews where I want. I'm not going to. So there was,
I'm that. Not going to fix that mix.
Right. Exactly. Like, so, and then I was told that they really liked Eric Bieniemy. They liked the idea of Eric Bieniemy. What did Eric Bieniemy do? He said, no, I'm good. Same thing. Right. Like, nah, I'm good. I don't need that. I don't need those problems. I'm gonna take my interviews in Cincy and Cincy. Like if I'm gonna join a dumpster fire, at least I'm gonna do it close to home, right? Like that was. And so we led off the show with this. Like these were the other options. I know people wanted Vic Fangio, but like they didn't even interview. They didn't interview a single defensive oriented coach.
Never on the table.
I mean, they didn't even look at him. So you can want Chris Richard and you can want Vic Fangio all they want. The team didn't interview them. We don't even know why. They may have requested interviews and they said, nah, I'm good, right? Like there's a legitimate shot that that is the truth. They may, you know, so then it came down to Adam Gase, who they interviewed first, who I was told from people I trust that he was the initial guy that they thought that they wanted. And I mean, when you look back last Tuesday, a week ago, after the Cardinals announced the firing of Steve Wilks on Monday, and then on Tuesday, when things started to heat up on January 1st, who was the first name everybody said? Adam Gase, right? Like, Adam Gase was the name that was linked to the Cardinals. A lot of people said, this is who the Cardinals want, blah, blah, blah. And so the Cardinals interviewed Gase. Something happened. I don't know what it was. I'm not going to speculate, but there it went from Wednesday being like, do they even let Gase leave the building? Like, that's the guy they want, you know, to Thursday night. The Cardinals have a deal in place with Cliff Kingsbury per Reddit and the UT Rivals board. So they moved on from Adam Gase. The other names we talked about, Jim Caldwell. I mean, that's a guy. I mean, it wouldn't have been a bad hire. It wouldn't have moved the meter one way or the other, but it wouldn't have been a bad hire. And then Dan Campbell and Zach Taylor, like, those were the guys. So it's not like they had the pick of the litter. They got the guy that they wanted after the first guy said, no, I'm good. Right? Like, that was the first guy. He said, no, I'm good. And then they got the guy they wanted after that. So, but it's not like they had their choice of guys. They went in knowing that they were going offense. Whether or not you agree with that, doesn't matter. That was what they were going to do. And they went offense, they stuck to that, and now, you know, they've got their guy. And they're going to hang their hat on that whether or not it works.
Right. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to come back and we're going to go kind of delve deep a little bit. We're not going to get too nerdy about this, but Seth's probably going to drive most of this part. We're going to look at some of the numbers in college that he's coached, and we're going to look into some of the scheme. What can we expect the Cardinals to look like offensively in 2019? That's kind of next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back from the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, and let's kind of delve into some of the things that look statistically. Here's the thing. Statistically, it is fantastic. Over the last 9 years where he's coached, whether it's as a head coach or an offensive coordinator, he's been a top five national offense 5 times. So 5 of the last 9 years, he's been a top five offense. Here's some of the numbers. So all 6 seasons, he's at Texas Tech, top 10 in passing and top 20 in offense all 6 season, and top 25 in scoring. So that's, you know, if you're talking about rankings in college football, that's more than 100 schools.
124 last year.
It's ridiculous. It's the ridiculous. So they're top 20. So it's the cream of the crop statistically every single year. Texas Tech averaged 30 points a game, 470 yards, 300 passes all those seasons. They averaged at least 30 points every year at Texas Tech. They averaged over 500 yards of offense in 4 seasons and over 450. This is a ridiculous part. So they averaged over 450 yards passing twice. Then it's not just passing, because they also averaged over 140 yards a game 4 times in those 6 seasons, and twice they averaged more than 40 points. So it, you know, 2011, 2016, his team led the nation in total offense. This is legitimate stuff. You guys saw the numbers that Patrick Mahomes put up in college. That was Cliff Kingsbury. You saw. So it says in 2016, 566 yards in total offense, 463 passing yards per game, 43 points a game. And it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous, the numbers that he's had. He's put up mad numbers with quarterbacks. So Case Keenum was lights out. Patrick Mahomes was lights out. He worked also with Davis Webb and Johnny Manziel. They both of both of whom, well, Baker Mayfield as well. He worked with Baker Mayfield before he transferred to Oklahoma. It's not just passing. He had in 2014-2015, DeAndre Washington was a back-to-back 1,000-yard running back. So it's not just a passing offense. It's very prolific, but his teams will move the ball no matter what. It's just stunning, the offensive numbers that he put up. And the fact is, if you look at the NFL now, college concepts are staples now in the pros. And not everything that Kingsbury did in his offense are college concepts. As Seth's going to talk to us a little bit about that, there are pro elements to his offenses. And this will be a lot of fun to watch. I get the feeling that once we get things opened up, Josh Rosen will look not only like a competent, but a very capable quarterback, capable of putting up not just who knows if it translates to wins. This offense should put up volume numbers within a year or two.
It should, and it should start to put up volume numbers kind of immediately, because the way Kingsbury works, it's the air raid, but it's an air raid with pro concepts. So you see a lot of in air raids, it's you know, 4 or 5 wide, and some of these things, but you're going to see a lot of RPO. You're going to see a lot more of, okay, what are our numbers? So basically in air raid, the idea is always to get numbers into different areas. And so you start on offense. And so say you're in a set with 3 wide receivers and 2 running backs, something that we'll see a lot with Kingsbury's offenses. what happens then is they'll read the numbers to the sides and they'll look at it and they'll go, okay, so, the linebackers are shading to the side with the two wide receivers. So that means we have the numbers on the side opposite the two wide receivers, weak side, if you want to call it that, but there's not really a strength to the formation. And so then that's where Rosen's key is. So he's reading whether or not he's going to run through a specific area, or if the wide receiver to that open side of the field is open, type of things. So that's kind of the basics. It's basically a counting system where they look at it and they say, okay, there's X number of players on this side of the field. We need, we have the advantage here. That's where we're going to go to. So the crazy thing with what Kingsbury does is he actually implements pro formations, pro concepts into these air raid schemes. So some of his best plays are actually where he's working off pro, what people would call, classic NFL plays, and then incorporating his air raid into them. So there are plays where they'll line up with the traditional, 2 tight end set. They'll, 2 wide receivers and 1 tailback. That's something we saw a ton with Bruce Arians, right? Like, that was one of the Arians staples in his offense. And what they'll do is they'll motion the second tight end or the H-back to the play strength side. And then they'll run everything to that side. And so they'll do, kind of a play action to that side. They'll pull the backside guard to that side to get all the defense moving to that side of the field. But on the backside, what they're doing are air raid concepts. So they'll have the slot wide receiver act like he's going to come following the play to take an end around. So that's a concept that we see all the time in the NFL, right? Where they you know, we saw it with J.J. Nelson all the time. They run that jet sweep. It just never works for the Cardinals because anytime they hand the ball to J.J. Nelson, he always got tackled right away. But what they'll do is they'll send him in motion to hit a jet sweep. But instead of completing the motion, that guy will stop and go back the other direction, and then they'll throw a screen pass over to him. So it's these concepts of it's a pro formation. It's a pro running play action, but then your wide receivers are doing things that are what people consider air raid or things like that, where you're still trying to get the numbers to one side of the field so you can go backwards. He'll line up in a diamond formation, which is like old school football, right? Like three backs in the play. And then he'll take a deep shot down the field with it, with one of his backside receivers. And so there are concepts out of this where he schemes from a pro formation and then runs the concepts of the air raid. There's also times where he just runs basic, you know, power football schemes. There's a play, if you follow it, where he runs a backside counter out of spread, and he's got an H-back with three wide receivers, and one running back. He's running out a pistol, and what he likes to do is he likes to bring the H-back in motion to the wide side of the field, and then he'll run a counter with his running back and his tackle and guard. And all of a sudden, it was the same exact play that Chase Edmonds got tackled on in the Bears game. That was the 3rd-and-2 play that they lost 3 yards, except it's just out of an exotic, you know, air raid formation where they're 3 wide and an H-back. And so people look at it and go, well, he's an air raid guy. Well, he is, but the air raid scheme lends itself to being used in a number of pro style ways. he's also a guy that does things with personnel packages that, let's be honest, you and I were screaming for this season. I talked to you about this before the show. Like, there's literally concepts where he'll put, I could see him putting David Johnson, Chase Edmonds, and TJ Logan, all three on the field together, because he's going to have, you know, faith in DJ's ability to play as a wide receiver. And then he uses both backs. He uses them interchangeably so they can go one way or the other. So if if you have a guy like Derek Coleman, who's not going to be back on the Cardinals, I'd be shocked if he's on the Cardinals roster next year. But if you have a Derek Coleman in the game and the Cardinals are in a 2-back set in the shotgun, you're looking for David Johnson or Chase Edmonds to run the football, right? Like, you're not going, oh, they're gonna we gotta watch Derek Coleman. They might try to hand him the ball or throw him the ball. Now, they did that a couple times this year, but you know, it's not something you worry about. Whereas if you put Chase Edmonds and TJ Logan in the backfield, and then you have David Johnson flexed out into the slot with you know, Christian Kirk out there as well. Holy crap. Like, okay, how do we defend this? Like, where do we go? Cause now all of a sudden they can run the ball, they can throw the ball. So it's about creating mismatches. It's about creating looks for your offense, but then it's also about creating easy throws. One of the things that Kingsbury does a lot of, and I thought was really lacking in this season, is he'll simply go into a trips formation on the wide side of the field, and then he'll just run a stop route and get the ball out quick and let the slot receiver make a move and kind of run with the ball. So if it's 3rd-and-1 or 3rd-and-2, if they're not in press man, these are the RPOs that we're talking about. If they're not in press man on 3rd-and-2, guess what? The guy that's the closest wide receiver not in press is going to get the ball, because he's going to train his receivers, catch the ball, get the 2 yards, then try to make a move. Don't don't catch the ball, make a move and try to get 2 yards. You know, catch the ball, get your 2 yards, and then, okay, now let's work. See if we can get, you know, 5, 6, 7, break a big play out of it. So these are all the concepts that he likes to run out of, that he likes to work out of, and then I think are going to lend themselves to the Cardinals being successful offensively in a hurry, because it allows you to do things without necessarily having all the personnel in place. Like, you don't have to have the Kansas City Chiefs offensive weapons, because you can manufacture success from the scheme.
And with that, we will wrap up. We're actually going to talk about a different coach. We're not going to talk about Cliff Kingsbury to wrap the show. Coming back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians is now the coach of the Tampa Bay Bucks. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. And the last part we're going to talk about isn't about really the Cardinals at all. It's about Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians, who said he was ready to retire, health concerns, wife wanted him home. You're ready to be home with the family, watch the grandkids. A year later, he's now the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he's getting the band back together. He's reunited with Jason Light, who was with the organization with the Cardinals, and he's bringing back a lot of his assistants, Harold Goodwin, Byron Leftwich, Todd Bowles, Nick Rapone, Kevin Ross, Keith Armstrong, who is one of the guys that Arians suggested the Cardinals should hire as their head coach a year ago. This causes the Bruce Arians hire is tough for Cardinals fans, because, well, if he wanted to keep coaching, why didn't he keep coaching here? And if he wanted to come back now, why didn't the Cardinals reach out to him again? Especially because he's got a 4-year deal. They could have kept riding that. You could have kept going with that for a little while. And with Josh Rosen, he'd have had a young quarterback. So what's your take? What's your take on the sudden change of heart from Arians? Because it wasn't just one change of heart. It went from, I like retirement, I'm good, to, I'll only coach if it's the Browns, to, oh, the Bucks, I'll listen to them too.
I think it was just it's just the reality of a couple things. And I wrote about this morning. I'm not shocked that he wanted to go back into it. That's not shocking. The shocking thing to me is that he went back into it with Tampa Bay. So you and I talked about this last week with the rankings of the coaching spots. And did we, I mean, I don't think we ever said, oh yeah, Tampa Bay is a better spot to be right now than Arizona. Right. Like,
we both talked about how it's more or less like, it depends on what you thought of Jameis Winston. And we know that he liked Winston, and he's the type of quarterback that can thrive in his offense if he can remain disciplined enough to not turn the ball over too much.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, not to get too much into a Bucks podcast, but that marriage, the first season, I would be shocked if Jameis throws less than 15 interceptions. I would put the over under at 18.5, and I would probably take the over. Like,
Carson Palmer had 22 that year.
Right. And it's not because I think Jameis is bad or that he's going to flop. I could see Jameis going for 32 and 22. Like, that's
yes, totally.
That's kind of my point. Like, it's such a hard system to learn. It's such a difficult situation to be in. And it puts so much stress on your quarterback, but
also on the receivers too.
On the receivers, but it's also this. Jameis has a lot of Carson in him. Maybe not high end Carson when Carson was, you know, the guy in Cincy, but he has a lot of Oakland and early Arizona and even late Arizona Carson in him, where he's a guy that's going to make throws that you're like, holy cow, that's why he was drafted first overall. And then he's going to make throws and you're going to go, why is this guy still in the NFL? Like, and so that, to me, that's the only explanation of why he would take that job, because the offensive line is probably close to as bad as the Cardinals. Like, they need a new left tackle. I'm pretty sure they need a new right tackle. I think they have a right guard, but like, so they're like, they might need 3/5 of an offensive line. You know, their wide receiver, Mike Evans, is 100% the best receiver on both rosters. And I don't mean that as a slight to Larry Fitzgerald, just Mike Evans is a freak at this point, and I'm pretty sure he's locked up long term. But outside of that, like, I love OJ Howard. I think he'll be a great asset, but they don't have a running back right now.
And he plays tight end. So
Right, exactly. Is Arians gonna reintroduce that back to his offense? Like, back to the Heath Miller days, you know, so you know, so we'll see what happens, man. Like, I think it was the fact that the system, or that the situation was roughly as bad as where the Cardinals are, and then of course that they didn't even, you know, he was like, neither side was even really interested in each other. And so it's like, if there was no animosity, if there was no ill will, if there was no, like, if there was still the love that we heard, you know, when everybody was crying when he left, then why was this not an option, right? Like, why not come back and get the band back together? Because he got the whole band back together. I mean, let's be honest. Like, and so, you know, Groom and Leftwich could have theoretically just stayed on the staff, right? Like, they could have just said, hey, Lefty, you're staying. We're bringing BA back, you know, and bring Goody back, bring Todd Bowles back. You know, didn't you say two coaches are going over there now? So it was just, I think that's what is more perplexing than anything. Isn't that he didn't come back to the Cardinals? It's just, why was it never an option?
Right. And I don't think there was any nefarious. There are some people, I don't know if they're connected or just speculative, and fans who think there's something hidden. But I want to make something clear. Bruce Arians changed this organization. And as we move forward with Steve Keim as general manager, maybe a little pull away, but definitely that first year that he was, like, how he forms teams and goes about things was formed by Bruce. His hands and fingers are still all over that organization in terms of impression. Now, Steve Wilks did a good job of changing the direct on the football. That's terrible. But he put his brand of things in the organization, incredibly well respected, hardworking. Everyone in the organization admired him. It was just the on-field product that was the problem. But at the same time, it was kind of one of those things. It can be completely true that he retired for the right reasons and he's getting out of retirement now for the right reasons too. It doesn't have to be anything nefarious. It's just now the team's in a different spot. And let's be honest. No, he knew Carson was retiring. It was a good time for him to go, because imagine this year him still coaching and having it be another 6 or 7 win team. Then there would have been legitimate chatter about it's time to move on from him. And there were even some fans who were ready to move on from him a year ago. No one begrudged his leaving. They were sad he was leaving, but they were like, okay, yeah, 2 years without the playoffs, it looks like his shtick was getting a little bit stale offensively, didn't have a quarterback. So I think it was the perfect time, and I think as well, trying to take the roster that they have now and trying to turn it around again to try and create the magic a second time, I don't think it ever works. You can create magic somewhere else, but he wasn't going to create that magic here again.
Well, and the other thing is this, and I truly believe this, and I thought you hit on it, like, the writing was on the wall, and I don't think from a health standpoint, he was in a place where he could have gone through this 2 to 3 year rebuild, retool. While there was a legitimate chance that they were going to get a quarterback, they didn't know which quarterback they were going to get. And, you know, and so Arians was coming in or was leaving a situation where he was trying to figure out what he wanted, you know, in his next step of life. And I truly do think, and not, like you said, not in a nefarious way, but I truly do think that he was good with what he had accomplished here, and he was ready for the next challenge, not necessarily was done coaching. I think that part, and I don't mean it in a negative way, but I think that part was done to kind of spare the fan base of, like, this is a, we're going into a new chapter of our team. We're going to move on from the most successful regular season coach in its history, because he doesn't want to go through this portion. And I think that's fair. But I think that's also, you know, realistic that he probably was good to go. Like, he was like, okay, this is okay. Like, I'm okay to walk away from this because I saw it through with these group of guys. And now, you know, he's going to a new test, a new way to kind of challenge himself. But again, there's a quarterback there that he knows he likes, that he's comfortable with.
And you know, so, and there was a radio poll. I don't begrudge him at all. I don't feel bad. In fact, I don't know if I'd have wanted Bruce back. I know he would have been fine. But again, he's 66 years old. So you've got the Jim Caldwell thing. And it's not just a normal – it's not a Jim Caldwell 66. He's a Bruce Arians. He lives hard. He works hard and he plays hard. And he's already had health scares.
Right. Well, and I ran a poll from this morning. And, you know, how do you feel about – Arians taking another head coaching job? So 60%, and this is almost 600 votes. 60% are, you know, good for him. Good luck. 20% were indifferent, and the other 20% were like, you know, what the hell, coach? Like that wasn't what you said. So I would say the majority of the fan base, not just the 60%, but 80% are like, good luck. Like, I don't care. Like, either I don't care or I'm happy. Like, he found what he wanted to be passionate about again in coaching. So, or somewhere he can be passionate about again in coaching. So that's all that matters. It doesn't have to be about, like you said, being nefarious. I think it would be naive to say that if the band was still together, meaning Carson Palmer, and he could, you know, he was keeping his guys, I do think he would have stayed on. But I think the idea of a new quarterback and a rebuild was just, I don't want to say overwhelming, but it was probably more than he wanted to endure at 66.
Well, and as us married men know, there's the notion of our wives wanting us home more. There's the reality of having us at home more, and it's not nearly as appealing as the thought of having us home more. So, right. You know, you know, after coaxing him into retirement and then realizing he's around the house a lot more, now go do something, go make some money, go stay out of my hair. That's very, very well could have been, because I remember seeing a tweet. It's like, she really wanted him to retire, and now she's open to him going back into coaching. Wonder why that is. Because men are hard to live with.
Well, and I do think it made a difference too, kind of like the Mike McCarthy scenario. Like, it's like a 6.5 hour drive to Greensboro, Georgia, where their lake home is. right? Like that's that's a lot easier than a basically a 5.5 hour flight,
right?
to where and then another probably hour drive. So you know that's it's 6.5 hours to One Buck Way or Center Drive or whatever they call it to the Greensboro, Georgia area. So that's nothing.
And so, but that's a wrap. So Bruce Arians, Bucks, Cliff Kingsbury here. The two will face off in Tampa next year. So that's going to
that's
be fun. That's going to be fun. That will be, the stories I want. And that's where something might come out. If there was anything to come out, something might come out. Because remember when remember how the story came out about how his time ended in Pittsburgh? And that kind of Tomlin did him wrong in a way. If there's anything to this, we'll find out, I think.
Well, and I think the other thing is this. That's a prime game to move to London. Because the Bucks are one of the teams.
Yes.
That could. So, I mean, you get the reuniting of Arians with against the Cardinals, you get, you know, Cliff Kingsbury and Josh Rosen, and then you get, London involved. So, those are my two hypotheses. It's either the opener of the season, and maybe it's like the early Monday night game, because, you know, they always have an early and late one. So that's a great story for an early Monday night game, or it's one of the London games.
Ooh, very true.
So
we'll go ahead and wrap that up. I think we've talked enough about both coaches. Not sure when we'll do the next show. I think we'll probably wait and to see. Like we've talked about, like we mentioned, there's really no reason to review this season. We'll get into the free agency, the offseason moves soon enough. But probably our next show will be reacting to the coaching staff that Kingsbury puts together. So with that, we'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Thanks for listening. As always, you know where to find us. Thanks for supporting the show. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back soon enough with another edition of the Best Hour of Cardinals Talk on the web. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!